Among the many statements Donald Trump has made in recent days about Iran is this one.
If we didn't hit within 2 weeks, they would have had a nuclear weapon. If we didn't do the B-2 attack a number of months ago, they would have a nuclear weapon.
2 weeks, he's saying. Tehran was 2 weeks away, he says, from having a nuclear weapon. Now, that is impossible to square with what Trump has said before, that Iran's nuclear program was, quote, obliterated by airstrikes last summer. That two-week claim, it also stirs memories for those of us old enough to remember another Republican president about to walk the U.S. into a war in the Middle East and warning of an urgent nuclear threat.
We cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
George W. Bush speaking there back in 2002, talking about Iraq and that Saddam Hussein posed a grave and gathering danger. That was a claim based on intelligence that turned out to be wrong. Richard Haass is president emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations. He had a front row seat to the planning for the war as the number three official at the State Department. We've called him to ask about that and to offer the long view on the moment the U.S. now finds itself in. Richard Haass, welcome.
Good to be with you.
So we're not going to go way back in the time machine and relitigate the WMD that turned out not to have been there because they didn't exist. What I do want to understand is how a president and his team have traditionally prepared the nation to go to war. I'm wondering what it was like walking the hallways of the State Department in 2002, 2003, in terms of the pre-meetings, the planning, the bureaucracy that is cranking into gear to try to pull off something like taking the nation to war.
Even though you're good enough to have me with you today, I may not be the perfect person to ask because I was against it. I thought this was an ill-advised war of choice. My perspective, shall we say, was not particularly valued or shared. But look, you're reading the intelligence, you're conscious of the policy debate, there was a sense of stakes. You are involved in an interagency process of great detail, enormous elaborate planning, though in 2003, we did not do nearly enough planning for the aftermath. And what planning we did, my office did, I was the head of policy planning, was largely rejected. In this administration, I'll be honest with you, I don't even get a sense they did the most rudimentary of planning. It's one of the reasons we're seeing this endless series of justifications and a kind of an improvisational quality to the handling of this war, which I would simply say ought to leave people uncomfortable.
I've tracked with interest the messaging on this Iran war, where we have, for example, heard Secretary Rubio come out and say, we knew Israel was going to strike, suggesting that maybe force the U.S. hand. And President Trump coming out and saying, no, if anything, I forced Israel's hand. I mean, what have you made of how this war has been messaged publicly, and how does it compare to what you witnessed in, for example, again, the run-up to war in Iraq?
There's a difference between disarray and dissent. What you just described, I would say, is disarray. The fact that different members of this administration, quite honestly, are staking out different positions, either as to why we went to war, what our war aims are going to be, and so forth. And that's bad for by any and every definition. But there's ways of institutionalizing dissent. I remember every Saturday morning when I was on the National Security Council staff, Brent Scowcroft, Bob Gates, and I used to meet in Brent's office, and Brent would have put on the table, okay, guys, where might we have it wrong? What do we have to consider that we haven't spent time with? And when a dissent comes forward that's uncomfortable, that's exactly what you want the president to hear. Now, the president may say, I hear it, I disagree, we've made a decision, or we're going to make a decision, let's march forward, fine. Then what you want to have, though, is a way to revisit assumptions. As you implement, you don't want to go on autopilot. You want to say, okay, do we need to revisit any of our goals or any of our means because of what we've learned en route?
We've been talking, Richard Haass, about planning, about the run-up to a war, what in an ideal world it looks like. I guess here we are a week and a half into this latest war in the Middle East. We are where we are. Like, does the planning matter at this point, how we got here? Because shouldn't we be looking forward?
Fair enough. I think the question now is on the conduct of the war and the grounds for war termination. That's the big conversation this administration ought to be having. What's good enough? What are we prepared to fight for? Where do we maybe have to consider compromising. How, by the way, do we get Israel and Iran on that page then? It only takes one to start a war. In this case, it's going to take three to end a war. Well, how should then our goals now reflect or affect how it is we fight this war? That really needs to be.
Has it become clear to you what the end goal is for the U.S.?
Has it become clear? No, absolutely not. All this talk about regime change has really confused things. You know, we've seen a lot of Iranian leaders killed. We still have a system, though, where a religious leader, a cleric, sits on top of things. You have this massive security apparatus led by the Revolutionary Guards. They're still largely in place. So one question is, what are we trying to accomplish with regime? What's good enough with the ballistic missile force? What's good enough with the nuclear program? What's good enough with Iranian support for terrorism and proxies? Again, no, I do not see any type of intellectual clarity emerging from the administration.
Anything you like about how the Trump administration is waging this war?
Look, the military prowess is impressive. You know, as an institution, the U.S. military is second to none. And the mastery of modern technology is beyond impressive. I think the collaboration, you know, between Israel and the United States is impressive tactically. You know, where I have fundamental questions is over the strategy of it. But no,
you're overall, describing a disconnect between operational successes and clarity about what the objective of those operations are.
100%. And that's one of the Achilles heels of this entire operation. It's possible one and the same time to say Iran is much degraded and diminished militarily, which it is, but to say so far at least the cost of this war far outweigh the benefits.
So what echoes do you hear, or not, what parallels from two decades ago and the run-up to war and then the beginning of the war in Iraq?
Parallels are poor planning, overly ambitious goals, not thinking through the aftermath, and what really worries me is what happened after the last war in Iraq and Afghanistan. It really gave energy, if you will, to a surge of isolationism in this country. Americans got disillusioned with the cost of war and the likely yield on that investment. Another failed war of choice. I worry that it's going to have us really turn inwards to a point that there's things we should be worried about in the world. Chinese threats to Taiwan, Russian threats to Ukraine and Europe and so forth. And we're not going to have either the military ability anymore because we will have used so many of our munitions and weapons. And more important, we won't have the political consensus or will to continue to act and lead in the world. And that would be an unfortunate parallel to what happened after Iraq and Afghanistan.
Richard Haass, he served in posts at the Pentagon, the White House, and the State Department, and then for 20 years as president of the Council on Foreign Relations. He is author of the Substack, Home and Away. Thank you so much.
Thank you.